June 14th, 2014.
Okay.
Everything flipped.
I am your host, Zach Weaver, and this is Made Us. My guest on today's podcast is Chad Walden. Chad's a jack of all trades, but his true passion is in food. And one of the things I admire most about Chad is his perseverance. Anytime Chad gets knocked down, he always gets back up and puts one foot in front of the other and keeps on going. Chad's had a few bumps in life that have knocked him down, but have never knocked him out. And it's this fight to get back up and to keep moving forward that truly makes him an inspiring person and someone I'm proud to call my friend. Today's episode was a tough one. It's a pretty emotional one, and you can hear it in Chad's voice. Some of the things we talk about in today's episode, Chad has been reluctant to talk about in the past, and I'm really happy he opened up to me. And as emotional as this episode can be, there's a lot of laughs and a lot of wise words said. So if you like what you've been hearing on Made Us, go into Apple Podcast, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and let us know how we're doing. And if you don't download an Apple Podcast, subscribe in your favorite podcast app. After you do all that, share the show with a friend. Sharing the show with a friend really gets these stories out there. And Chad's story is one that needs to be shared. As always, you can keep up with us on social media at facebook.com/madeuspodcast or on Instagram and Twitter at madeuspodcast. And if you have any guest suggestions, drop us a line at madeuspodcast@hotmail.com. So I can't thank you enough for all the great reviews we've been getting in Apple Podcasts. And I want to take a moment and read one for you. This review really hit home with me and means a lot to me. The title of it is Actual Human Connection. It's a 5-star rating. And here's the review. I love this podcast because I feel like I'm connecting with the guests, which is nice in this age of social media and lack of interaction with people. Hearing other people's stories are inspiring and motivating. And that review comes from Sam Pauly. Reviews like this really mean a lot to me. The point of this show is just like the review says, to get people's stories out there to inspire and motivate. And that's my number one goal. If I can help one person with this show, that's enough for me. So I truly thank any of you that have shared the show with your friends and left a review. It really means a lot and it helps these stories grow. And I appreciate you guys tuning in each week. So now that I'm done with all the formalities, help me welcome sous chef Chad Walden. Chad, welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm happy to have you here, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
So I just want to do this real quick. Right before I started recording, we were talking about the whole phrase, fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
And I love that phrase.
So do I.
That's like the perfect thing. Like, that's my life.
If you're not first, you're last.
So I literally had a conversation with a guy today about the whole fake it till you make it thing. And it started for me. It's not necessarily the fake it till you make it, but I remember when I was younger, I had a coach that told me something that's always stuck with me.
Yeah.
That's almost that exact same thing.
Okay.
Is he's always said, act like you've been there before. And it really stuck with me. And it kind of fits that fake it till you make
totally,
it.
Totally.
Because it's that like, yeah, maybe this is unfamiliar for you, but just act like it is.
Right. Yeah.
And go with it.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, for sure.
Fake it till you make it. I mean, you know, I definitely have lived my life by that, but it's worked out pretty well so far.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. So in studio tonight is Mr. Chad Walden. Indeed. Chad's been a friend of mine for years, and fortunate enough, he just moved back to Michigan. He was in Florida, being a Florida guy.
Yeah, I'm smitten with the mitten. I'm back.
So, Chad, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I moved to Michigan probably about 25 years ago, originally from Vancouver, Canada, greater Vancouver area. Moved here with my old man and lived here for a while, built some houses and done some property work and stuff like that. And then just kind of been here working, you know?
Yeah, you're kind of a jack of all trades.
Yeah, well, you know, I fall into things and then kind of fall out of them and just kind of come around, you know? Whatever needs to happen, we don't make a buck, really.
Yeah, so what are you doing now?
Well, right now I'm working up in St. Joe at the Bistro on the Boulevard. It's a nice little restaurant that has a facade for being more high-end and real fancy, and they're trying to get away from that now.
Okay.
So with my chef that I'm working with now, who is, I consider my mentor, I worked with her at Frankie's when it first opened in Union Pier.
Okay.
She made me fall in love with food.
Nice.
So this is all her fault. But no, she's great. She's pretty much the reason why I'm doing this. When I showed up and started working for her, I was supposed to be a dishwasher, And within 10 minutes, she put me on a line and she's like, you're not washing any more dishes.
Oh, so, really? And this is when you started at Frankie's?
No, this was actually at the Chicken Wing Country Club.
Okay.
So she was there first. That's where I first met her, through a friend of mine, Micah Carlson.
Okay.
And then she pulled me on a line and I started working there the summer for her. And just the way that she did things, the process, her technique, it was very honest. You know, it was very straightforward and just, this is how you do things the right way. And being with my father, who he is, there's only one way to do things, and it's the right way. So yeah. It kind of followed suit in my life. That's kind of, you do things the right way the first time. So now I'm working with her again, and it's fantastic. Like, I'm excited to be working with her. I definitely feel like there's a lot I haven't learned from her. So for me, it's like just picking her brain.
Yeah.
So, but right now I'm just trying to get acclimated back into that more of a high-end fine dining, where down in Florida, it's been just kind of slap it out.
Yeah.
Get the food to the people. And I don't really like that. So,
yeah, that's a little strange. I know, you know, at the times you've made food for us, even though they're coming out of our kitchen,
yeah,
they're high end food.
Well, I mean, that's her. That's Cheryl Bernanke, you know? That's her teaching. My basis for everything I do is, in food wise, is from her. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm working there now, and it's, you know, we're going to turn that place around. I'm looking forward to what's going to come this summer. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So, how long have you been doing food stuff?
Oh, man. Let's see. I started out in restaurants when I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Horse Feathers and Sawyer as a dishwasher.
Yeah.
Did that and then slowly stepped up into cooking. I think one of my first cooking gigs was at Luisa's Cafe in Harbert. Just kind of went from there. Like, I did that for a few years and didn't really care for it. Then I started doing construction and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to work this hard.
Yeah.
So I kind of went back into the kitchen. And then when I found Cheryl, like, how much passion she has is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that draws me. It's like, people who have passion is like, okay, this is the type of person I want around or want to be around.
No, so, for sure. I think that's a life lesson right there, is absolutely. Just to have people in your life that are passionate about whatever it may be. It doesn't matter what it is, but just as long as they're passionate about whatever it is.
Right, right.
So what style of food do you like to cook the best?
My favorite style of food is probably the French technique, which is sauce everything.
Okay.
Everything has a sauce, whether it be fish, steak, pork, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's vegetables, you know, put a cheese sauce on it. It's fine. You know, I like that, the dipping sauce and what's left over, you take the bread and you mop it up and it's just, you know, it's like, there's the flavor, you know?
Yeah.
So lately what I've been getting into is making pasta.
Okay.
Just the pasta, not like, you know, lasagna and all that, but the actual noodle itself, like breaking it down and simplifying it and just, you know, trying to manipulate it and try and get like the best quality product out of three ingredients.
Nice.
So that's something I've been getting into. That's something, you know, you can look forward to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So I've been getting into that. I've done a couple different things like fettuccine, lasagna. I did a lasagna when I got back into town for a couple of friends, but I like to do like take some spinach, roast it off, put it into the noodle, and you got green noodles. You put like a white sauce on it, and it just looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm hungry now.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I know. I just ate. Like, we ate together, but I'm not.
Just had a
again.
Burrito the size of my face.
Yeah, now I'm hungry again. Thanks. Thanks, Chad.
You're welcome.
So one of the reasons I had you on is I've always really admired your ability to bounce back. You've always been a person that perseveres through a lot of things, and I've watched it. We've been friends for the last 15 years, something like that.
Oh, God, we're old.
I know. And I've seen you persevere through a lot of things and kind of bounce back. You're one of the people that I always see, you know, when something gets you down, you don't stay down for long.
No.
And it's always been something I admired about you.
I appreciate that. It's just that work ethic, you know?
Yeah.
You can't stay down. You can get knocked down, but you got to stand back up
again. Yeah. What do you think kind of put that into you?
My father.
Yeah.
Definitely. Being raised by him, like, it's just hard work is what's going to get you where you need to be. I mean, that may not be like necessarily the truth now with like the millennials and blah, 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 however that works. I don't know, because I'm not that. But I know through hard work that you can get from point A to point B. And it may not be the exact spot where you want to be, but it's a stepping stone to get where you need to be.
Yeah.
So for me, it's just, you know, if it doesn't work, it's not failure. It's a previous attempt at success. Like,
for
that's
sure.
It. That's all it is. So you can't beat yourself up for too long because you'll break your own spirit.
Yeah.
And only you can break your own spirit.
Yeah, that's
I don't
true.
Think that outside influence is, it's outside influence, but it can only do so much with you. Like, you have control of your own life. You have control of your own destiny. You have control of what you do and what you become.
For sure.
So you can't be a product of whatever the environment is or what the failure was. So you just got to press forward. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Just keep pushing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I know recently, I say recently, it's been, you know, over the last 5 years, something like that. You've had a lot of ups and downs.
Oh, yeah.
And I've watched it.
A lot of people have, I'm sure.
Well, as a friend, I've taken a front row seat and kind of seen you persevere through a lot that would really take somebody down. And that's kind of why I brought you here to talk about it.
Fair enough.
So a few years ago, 5 years, 6 years, four years?
2014.
So 4 years.
Yeah, June 14th, 2014.
Okay.
Everything flipped. That was the day that I lost my dad.
Yeah, that's a rough day.
I was working Flag Day in Three Oaks on a food truck for Greenbush, and I got the phone call from the nursing home, and I flew up there, obviously as safely as possible.
Yeah.
Got there, and he was already gone. So that was something that took a lot out of me.
Yeah,
a lot.
I can imagine.
And it wasn't just that. It was what followed, really.
Okay.
With, like, quote-unquote family. with Norma, his wife, they had a house on Jericho Road that, you know, my dad paid for in cash because that's the way he did business.
Yeah.
And when he got the place, it was like $80,000.
Your dad was real into that too, wasn't he? Like flipping houses?
Yeah. Well, you talk about a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
That man could do anything. You can make gold out of nothing. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, I used to love the furniture he'd made, like all the stuff he would carve, and that stuff was amazing.
Yeah. The woodworking was immense. I mean, the guy had talent beyond talent beyond talent.
Yeah.
When he passed, the house that they were living in, she sold that off and took off. I have not heard a single peep since.
Oh, geez.
So I don't know what happened. I was promised this and that from my father.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've obviously known my dad my whole life, but there's some things that he would just not know about. I don't know. He just didn't know how to deal with, and he would kind of just let people handle that.
Yeah.
And I think he got handled on that. Far as, like, you know, the will and whatnot. And it's not for me. It's not about getting money or nothing like that, but, you know, it's just like, it would be nice to know that, like, okay, there's something there, you know, something.
Yeah.
I was literally left in a rain. So about 2 weeks after that, I bounced. I basically just I flipped my lid a little bit, but, you know, it's going to happen. There was a lot of pressure.
I know you're really close to your father, and, you know, so losing somebody that close to you is hard.
Oh, it is.
And it will really break you.
It will. And it did break me. The biggest thing for me was that I needed to leave because I know I can't drive 2 miles without seeing something that my dad did or that me and him did.
Yeah.
Or something he built or a house that he built or, you know, just something that had his name on it. And with this area being so small, it's like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
So I transplanted myself. And I was like, I remember Florida as a kid going down there with my dad. And I, you know, it was awesome. I loved it. The beaches, the sun. I mean, it was like, okay. And I know someone down there. So I was like, I'm going. I'm out of here. I left. I literally called my buddy up, Rich. I'm like, hey, I'm coming to town. I'm 2.5 hours away.
Yeah. Where'd you go down to?
I went down to a place called Lothman, which is like the Davenport area, about 2 exits west of Disney.
Okay.
So I'm like right in the center of the state.
Okay. So kind of Orlando-ish.
Yeah. No beaches. No sand. Well, lots of sand. But anyways, I went down there and I just started kind of starting over, essentially. I mean, at that point, I just packed up my car and left. Like, I'm out. So
yeah, I can imagine.
I didn't really say much to anybody either.
Yeah.
I just did it, you know, and people were calling me like, hey man, what's going on? I'm like, I'm 5 states away.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
I remember that really well. I remember the whole circumstance. One of our mutual friends called me and said, you know, hey, I think Chad's dad passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard from him? Talking about you.
Yeah.
And at the time I hadn't. And I think I called you and we talked a little bit. And it wasn't much. You're like, hey, I just had to get away, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And
that's all it was, too.
I got you, you know. And then I do remember, this is a little bit down the road, and this is really personal, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I do remember, you know, you calling me maybe 2 months later and kind of apologizing and just being like, dude, I'm sorry.
I felt terrible because I just left. You know, I left a lot of strings.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything to even my closest friends, obviously you and, you know, all our mutual friends, and everyone was just kind of like, what happened, you know? And I kind of had to slowly open myself up to tell that story. And it was just like, you know, I hate telling that story, but people need to know. They need to understand why I did what I did. It's not like, oh, Chad's crazy. Well, yeah, well, I'm crazy, but, you know, but I just did what I did for me. It was for me. It was for healing. You know what I mean? And that's the biggest thing. I just had to heal. But now that I've healed and I'm back. Like, I feel comfortable being here again.
Yeah.
I wasn't comfortable. Even, like, the last few years before he passed, I was like, like had this real like kind of an itch, just kind of like I just, it's so stuffy, like I got to get away.
Yeah.
You know, but there was a lot of things going on with, you know, my dad's health and whatnot and having to figure out things on the fly.
Yeah.
Just like, because he wouldn't say nothing.
Yeah. And your dad, ever. I mean, to fill people in a little bit, your dad was a little bit older as yes. a parent than yeah. than what, you know, what you'd expect kind of.
So. Yeah. So he was 54 when I was born.
Yeah.
So definitely a later life, you know, baby, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, you know, he
dude, took. Not to stop you, but
no, go ahead.
I couldn't imagine. Like, I'm 34.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine having a kid right now.
Right.
Like to have one in 20 years.
Yeah,
dude, that's gnarly.
I know. It's crazy. It is. It's a really wild situation, and I found out a lot more after he passed about how that all kind of came about. He picked me up in Bellingham, Washington, and at this is the age of 6.
Okay.
You know, I'm standing between my mom and my dad, and they're like, who do you want to be with? Oh. So at 6 years old, I'm making, like, life decisions. Like, do I put gas in the tank or do I eat food?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so I chose my dad, obviously, because the biggest reason was that he spoiled the shit out of me as a kid. Like, yeah, that's exactly what I want.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew that the situation I was in at the time living in Canada, it wasn't good. It was very touch and go. Like, there was a lot of sketchy things going on
yeah.
that really shouldn't have. But I knew if I had the opportunity to get out of that situation, I was going to. And I did. So I did that. And then I was with my dad and we were in Hoodsport, Washington for a while. And like, it was just kind of wild because we would rent houses and they'd be fully furnished and stuff. And it's, I was talking to a friend of mine that knew my dad when I was just a kid.
Okay.
And he was telling me these stories and I'm like, wow, now my memories are starting to kind of link up and make more sense. Like, why did we live in this house by the ocean and all of a sudden move? Like, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah. But
it was basically my old man trying to find stability for me. So that was kind of part of that. And it was just, it was wild. We ended up here in Baroda at the trailer park. And I think we were there for a couple of years and then he bought a house.
Okay.
That's the house on Flynn Road, which okay. I don't know who's listening to this podcast, but if you've been to the house on Flynn Road, there's been a lot of great parties there.
Yeah.
There's a little known band that used to play there and rock the hell out. So.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so he lived there. He bought that house. We had the only 3-story house in Sawyer.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he got away with that, but I guess knowing people helps.
Yeah, it does help for sure.
So he had that. And then there was a couple places that we bought here in Bridgman that we fixed up. Two were on Jericho. One was on Shawnee. And then the last one was on Jericho across from the golf course.
Yeah.
Which was a beautiful home too. I did a lot of the tile work in there myself. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. It was, you know, it was fun working with him, but you know, he's a stubborn old son of a bitch, you know, but that's my dad. I can say that. So, you know, I'm going to get a kick in the ass later at night for this.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But yeah, I mean, you know, he was an older man. Like he was 82, 83 when he passed.
Yeah.
So he lived a long life.
Yeah.
And he did a lot. Like, I found pictures of him when he was a rancher.
A rancher?
A rancher.
Really?
Yeah. Like, straight up, like, buying cattle, steer, and all that stuff. Like,
didn't you say
cowboy.
Didn't you say at one point your dad had, like, a pilot's license or flew yeah. or something?
Yeah. I guess when he was, like, 21, he lived in Berrien Springs. I guess back in those times, when you're 21, he was, like, married, had a house. He owned, like, 2 or 3 gas stations in Berrien Springs, like, in town.
Holy hell.
Yeah, like, this is the kind of stuff that I found out after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember driving down the street, and he was talking about it. This is probably 15 years ago. And he's like, yeah, I slept with that girl in that house, and I slept with this one over in that house. And me and her, we used to go down to the dam over here, and we'd meet up, and I'm like, Dad, I'm like, these women are, like, 90 years old now.
Oh, man.
I'm like, let's not talk about this.
That's awesome.
That was my dad, like.
Oh, that's funny as hell.
Yeah, that's the old man for you. He was a dirty old man. Son of a preacher.
Yeah.
Which, you know, they're the worst.
For sure. Yeah, I know when he passed, that was really hard on you. And having to take off definitely helped you a lot mentally, you know. I know you said you kind of chose Florida because you knew somebody down there and you had some fond memories.
Yeah, yeah.
Was your intent to stay down there as long as you did? Or was it just...
You know, I was just kind of winging it, honestly. Like, I rolled up. I was in the state. I showed up with like $200 in my pocket.
Yeah.
I'm like, let's just see what happens. Like, I just needed, I mean, I could have been there 2 weeks and came back.
Yeah.
I had no idea what was going to happen. I didn't have anything planned. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. I just wing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I go down there and I started working. I had 3 jobs. I was working at a Hooters, an LBV, which is ended up being like the 4th busiest Hooters in the world. I was doing that. And then I was doing, what was it? A golf cart shop on my days off.
Yeah.
Tearing off bodies to get painted. And then at nighttime, from like, you know, 4 a.m. till 7 a.m. I was cleaning clubhouses in this little rich town called Celebration that Disney used to own.
Holy cow.
So I was working 3 jobs for like 7 months.
Yeah. You just pretty much working to keep your head straight?
Just, yeah, to keep busy because I didn't want to stop and think.
Yeah.
It was just go, 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 go. And that was the only thing that kept beating in my head was thinking about what my dad would say. It's like, just keep going, keep going. So I kept going. And then like 7 months in, it just got to be a little too much. I'm like, I'm done with all this.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need to find a job that's going to support me for what I need. And so I can have, now I can have balance in my life.
Yeah.
So I picked up a gig and I started working at this place called Celebration Town Tavern. It's a nice little place. It's New England style bar, you know, Boston everything.
Okay.
Seafood place, open kitchen. Never worked an open kitchen before. I was like, this is interesting.
What? So I'm ignorant to that. What's an open kitchen?
Okay, so an open kitchen is essentially there's a kitchen where you prep, and then out front's where the grill, the saute station, all that stuff. You're cooking in front of the customer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so they can walk right up to you and talk to you, which is fun because when it's like a Friday and Saturday night and you got like 30 pieces of meat on a grill and you're babysitting that and you got someone over here like, oh, this was fantastic, da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it, you know, trying to like, you know, cook and not like burn things for the rest of the customers. Yeah. But it was an interesting...
It's almost like white people hibachi.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's white hibachi. There's got to be a different word than hibachi for that. grilling.
That was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, that's kind of like hibachi style, but for like really white people.
Yeah, really white Bostonian people. But it was a good experience. Like it gave me, you know, it was something different. Like, you know, in the kitchen, there's a lot of cursing. There's a lot of just absurdity going on. So
yeah, I can
like,
imagine.
You have to be professional. And yeah. I don't know if you know me, but I'm not very professional. I repeat, I am not very professional. but, you know, it was something new. I worked there for a few years and, you know, met some people. And it was a good situation for a while, you know. And then it was just like, you know, it's kind of mundane. And I was like, I need more of a challenge now. You know, like, give me something else. So
yeah.
I started working in a deli for a friend of mine's mom and trying to help her, like, flip things around a little bit to kind of just get people interested more into the other than just the breakfast scene and the lunch scene there, like maybe try and introduce some sort of a dinner scene in a deli, which is, you know, I wouldn't go to dinner in a deli, but if there's something that, you know, that's the kind of what she was trying to do is just expand her business hours where it's active and there's like revenue coming in. So I tried to do what I could for her and did that for a while. And then what did I do after that? I did a lot of things. I worked at a car wash down there.
Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah. So car wash, let's get into that real quick.
Yeah.
Twin brothers, Nick and Jordan Rockefeller. Great guys. Love them. Apparently, we look a lot alike. And I feel so sorry for these guys who have to walk around with, like, my face. So I meet these guys. And this is about the time that I'm getting ready to open up this restaurant.
Okay.
Which I'll come back to that.
Okay.
So I meet these guys. And they're just like, holy cow, da, 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 like, we've heard a lot about you and this and that. I'm just in there getting my car washed.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have no idea who you are. He's like, oh, my name is Nick and this is my brother Jordan Rockefeller. I'm like, oh, I know who you are. I work with your mother. You know?
Okay.
Like, you're the Rockefeller boys that I hear so much about. And they're just like, yeah, you know, a couple of New York knuckleheads. You know what I mean? They're good, great people, you know? So, you know, I ended up working with them a little bit before the restaurant opened just to kind of, you know, pass my time more or less. And then a little bit right before I came back. So, the restaurant. So I meet these people at the Celebration Town Tavern. They're bartenders.
Okay.
They've been doing, you know, they've been in the business for 20 years, slinging drinks. So they're really, really good at it. They're very professional with people. They're very people oriented.
Yeah.
I get approached by the husband and he's like, I want to open up a restaurant. He goes, I'd like you to be the chef. And I'm like, bet. Sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
And at this time, you know, I'm working at that restaurant and I'm doing birds, by the way. The same birds that my dad made here.
Just fill in the gap on that one.
So my dad used to make these cement seagulls. It's something that he, as far as I know, created 40, 50 years ago.
Okay.
I've seen replications across the country that weren't nearly as good as what he did, but it's something that he did. And I mean, you can't go anywhere around this area without seeing them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was doing that in Florida. I kind of made like a casting out of wood and then built a mold off of that and then just kept replicating and replicating and replicating. So now I got about 5 or 6 of my own molds.
Okay.
Because my dad sold the business off to some other folks and they just started doing it and not nearly as well. Anyway, so I was doing that at the time when I was in Florida, and he's like, do you want to come and be a part of this? And I'm like, yeah, sounds great. So we spent 2 years looking for a location.
Oh, wow.
And the first location was close to their place, which is Windermere.
Okay.
Real high-end, affluent neighborhood. But it didn't work out because the, what was it? The builders, they weren't even ready to start excavating anything for like another year or so. And we're like, can't wait that long.
Oh, geez. You know? Yeah, that's...
So in the meantime, we kept looking for other places, and they ended up settling on a place in Davenport in a place called Champions Gate now.
Okay.
And what the thing is...
I feel like I've drove past that.
Yeah, you have. It's on I-4. It's exit 58, and the biggest thing there is the Omni Hotel.
Okay.
And that's like the golf course where the PGA, I guess, has come. And yeah. It's got two courses, national and international. That's what that area is known for. So we ended up settling on that and found a spot. It was a shell. So we basically built out the whole inside, and I got to design the kitchen as far as like what equipment we're going to get, where it's going to be placed, you know what I mean? So I got to design that. I've never done it. It was essentially a kitchen consulting is what it is.
Oh, nice. That's a pretty neat thing.
Yeah. So people that do that, it could be like a $20,000 gig. You know what I mean? Just to do that.
Yeah.
Let alone run it.
And you're kind of laying out
how
you would want the kitchen to be.
Exactly. Ran. Yeah. So I laid out the thing. I laid out the kitchen exactly how I wanted it. So the biggest thing, the concept that we had was like, we're going to smoke meats.
Okay.
I was like, all right, cool. So I know Southern Pride because Greenbush has Southern Pride.
Yeah.
And that's a great smoker. It's a consistent product. It's nice and juicy. You never have any problems with it. And if you do have a problem with it, they'll have someone come out and take care of it for it.
And Greenbush is a local brewery to Southwest Michigan that's actually a big time thing now.
Yes. Yeah. Which is crazy. They've blown up. They put Sawyer on the map.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
Obviously, the Garden Center was here with Barry, you know what I mean? But people went there for that, you know what I mean? But now people are here for Greenbush, amongst other things. So yeah,
they're going to rename that city pretty soon.
Yeah, Greenbush.
Yeah.
Essentially. So I was used to using Southern Pride smokers, so I got a couple of those. I got basically $100,000 worth of smokers between two smokers.
Oh, wow.
So there's $100,000 right there. I think we ended up spending like $176,000 in the kitchen.
Man, that's almost a dream.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what it was. I asked for seconds, dings. You know, I don't need brand new equipment. Just give me something that works and we'll build it from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the money guy was like, no, we're just like, what's good? I'm like, Vulcan. You know, it's kind of middle of the road. It's not too high. It's not too low. It's like right in the middle. So if something happens, anyone could really come and fix it.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay. So we got all that. I got double convections, a 6-burner with another convection oven underneath and conventional. And then there's 2 fryers, a 5-foot flat top. With a chef's table underneath, which is basically like a cooler.
I only mildly know what the fuck you're talking about right now.
that's all right.
I love it, but I only mildly know what the fuck you're talking about. Passion, exactly.
Passion. And then the other side is basically, you know, you're setting up your cold salads and you're putting up the food in the heat lamps and whatnot. You know what I mean? You have like your setting to put up the food to sell it.
Okay.
So this is going where we designed the whole restaurant with this company out of Tampa. Can't remember the name of them now. But they basically did everything. I took them a drawing. I'm like, this is what I want it to look like. So by the time we were all said and done, that's what it looked like. They just put in the fittings about sizes, about you know how much space is there realistically.
Yeah.
But basically the drawing that I gave them is basically what ended up.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a dream right there to build your own kitchen.
Yeah, I've never thought I would ever get a chance to do that. So I was just geeked about that.
Yeah.
Now, At this point, I've submitted menus to this guy.
Okay.
Probably 8 or 9 different types of menus, you know, all across the board from high end to like smash burgers to whatever.
Yeah.
So he kind of, him and his wife, they kind of just pick and chose what they liked and made their own menu out of it. And I'm like, all right, well, cool. That's the menu. All right. Now I'm going to start recipeing things out. So I brought someone in from the other restaurant that I worked at, Celebration Town Tavern, who became my sous chef. You know, hardworking guy, definitely knows how to get things done.
Yeah.
So we started working out things, me, him, and his wife, actually. We started recipeing up all the menu and put it all together and started doing, like, tastings and pictures and stuff like that. And people were getting real excited about it, as well as I was. I mean, this is for me, is like a dream. You know, this is what I want. You know, I didn't think I'd get a chance to do this, let alone as early as I have.
Yeah.
You know, I figured that I'd be, like, 40-something years old before I got an opportunity. We're going along. We're doing it. And, we get to a point where we're opening up. 2 weeks in, this guy calls me in after I come off like a 100-hour work week, says he doesn't need me anymore. Says on my work ethic alone is grounds to fire me. I was like, okay. So I'm sitting here listening to this guy say all this.
This is
the guy that I partnered with.
And this is after you guys have opened?
After. 2 weeks. This 2 weeks into opening, he's like, I had the feeling that it didn't go the way he thought it was going to go. I think he spent too much money in the front of the house. I think he put money into like a POS system, which is too far new age that he had problems with. Then we had to trash that one and basically get a whole new one.
What's a POS system?
Point of sale system.
Okay.
So
okay,
when you put your order in, the waitress will take your order and then she'll walk up to a screen and she'll punch it in and that goes to the kitchen. So that's the, you know, they keep track of sales.
Yeah.
So they had this one that was going to be like new age. It's going to be iPads. It's, you don't have to walk back and forth. It's going to eliminate steps and this and that. And they built it into the infrastructure of the building. It didn't work.
Oh no.
For a week. And he's like, we get to a point. He's like, go ahead, start ordering food. We're going to open. I was like, okay. I ordered like $8,000 worth of food and then we didn't open.
Oh no.
So there's $8,000 gone.
Yeah.
That's not coming back. So I had to basically just cook it off and gave it away. And then we had some people come in and we're just like, here, just, you know, I had a friend of mine come in who was like a teacher at a school. And I'm like, here, bring in the kids. Let's just give them some food.
Yeah.
Let's do something positive with this. You know what I mean? So we did that and, you know, people loved it. People were getting really excited about it. We opened up, started going, and it just, rug pulled out from underneath me. And because I was so trusting, I never got a contract, but I kept asking for one and I never got it. And now the more I sit back and look at it, I'm like, this is might have been the whole fucking plan to begin with.
So, oh, man.
You know what? It is what it is.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, they wouldn't have what they have without me. So I take it as a win.
Yeah.
I got to learn something, a few things. So now I'm just moving forward with it.
Yeah.
And I'm back in Michigan. So.
Yeah. And it's pretty weird that, you know, after all of that, I say weird, you know, I know you.
Yeah.
That sucked. You got the rug pulled out from underneath you.
Yeah.
And you just built this, you know, wonderful restaurant that they're going to probably run into the ground.
I heard it went downhill very quickly.
But, you know, after kind of fighting that back.
Yeah.
You get a random phone call one day.
Yeah. So at this point, this is probably 2 or 3 months after that's happened. I've done a couple different jobs. I was working at Disney, which is just insane. Like, I'm talking 2,500 covers a night.
Yeah. You work at Disney or like at
on the Disney property at Disney Springs.
Okay.
Okay. It's called the Boathouse. It's owned by Gibson Steakhouse, which is out of Chicago.
Yeah.
It's under that umbrella. This restaurant does $100,000 a night in business.
That's unreal.
2,500 covers. I mean, $100,000. Most restaurants weren't doing that in a week.
That's craziness.
And restaurants around here aren't doing that in a week.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? So I learned how to cook on a very large, massive scale and quick and fast and just, you know, put the food out.
Yeah.
So that was a very interesting idea that I was doing. I was like, this is nuts. I've never done anything like this. This is crazy experience. So I get to a point, I'm like, I don't want to keep doing this. Not for the money. It's not worth it. I called my chef, Cheryl. I'm like, hey, what's going on? What's been good? This and that. I kind of told her the story about the restaurant. She's like, you know what? Don't feel too bad, Chad. It happens a lot in our industry. And that made me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, I really fucked up. You know what I mean? But it wasn't me. It was just shitty people and it happens and you got to move on. So that's what I did. And I'm like, so what's going on with you? Where are you at now? And she's like, I'm at Frankie's. I was like, is there an open position? She's like, yeah, but I can't pay you much. And I'm like, well, I can't really come up there for that kind of money.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I kind of got an offer to possibly do the bistro in St. Joe. And he goes, if I take that, she goes, I'm going to need a sous chef. And I'm like, all right, well, cool. Find out about it. Let me know. I'll come up.
Yeah.
So a couple days later, I get a phone call and she's like, when can you be here? I was like, I'll see you in October. And here I am.
Yeah.
You know what crazy. I mean? So it just worked out.
And then once again, back on the story of you not talking to people because you're a dick.
I am a huge dick when it comes to that.
I'm sitting at my studio, just hanging out.
Minding your business.
Minding my own business. And the door swings open and you come walking in out of nowhere.
Right. I'm a fucking ninja, bro.
You're like, I moved back. I'm like, since when? You're like, 4 o'clock yesterday.
I'm here and I came to see you and you're welcome. Hilarious. You're like, how long are you in town for? I'm like, well, until I move again.
So. No, but that's always been awesome about you is like, you know, you've said it several times over this, but it's all about putting that one foot in front of the other and moving forward.
Absolutely, man. I mean, you just can't stop. You have to keep pushing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what life, I mean, if there's a meaning to life, that's it. It's not about accumulating as much stuff or, you know, obviously family's important and stuff like that, but you got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
So otherwise that stuff goes away.
That's really awesome. And that's always, like I said at the top of this, and I'll say it again. That's always something I've admired about you is you seem like
that.
No matter what knocks you down, you're always just right back up.
I'm just stubborn. I'm like a damn mule. I'm keep kicking. I don't care. I'm gonna figure something out.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, hustling. That's the biggest thing. And that's, I mean, it is a hustle.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I'm gonna be good at it. I'll figure it out.
For sure. That's something about you that I've always seen is it didn't matter what you did. You know, when you were working in restaurants, you mm-hmm. were always 100%.
Absolutely.
You know, when you got away from that and you sold golf carts for a while.
Yeah, that was my dad's gig. He was doing it out of his garage.
Which is strange.
Yeah, I legitimized the hell out of that, man.
Yeah,
we
golf carts.
Money.
Yeah, I didn't even know, like, that. I didn't know that was a thing.
Bankroll. That's what that was. That was ridiculous.
You fucking went 100 miles an hour at that and did that.
Yeah, for like 3 or 4 years, and then his health got really bad, and I just couldn't afford to balance the cost of the business and then along with what was going on with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he's like, well, I need, you know, a few thousand here and a few thousand there. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we need to get carts and stuff. This isn't, you know what I mean? It wasn't conducive anymore.
Yeah.
So I had to shut it down. But yeah, man, we ran the hell out of that. Like right there on Radar Highway, right in Sawyer.
Who would have thought golf carts was a business?
Not me. Not me. I can tell you that.
I never would have thought golf carts was a business.
It was something my dad did on the side. It was one of his side hustles. Like he was making these cement seagulls and he's selling golf carts, slinging them off to the side. Yeah. You know? And he was like, you know, we're getting to a point. He's like, I got people approaching me from the city that says I can't sell these out of my garage anymore. I was like, all right, well, let's go find a spot. You know what I mean? So we found a spot, opened up shop. I got a hold of a friend of mine, Mike Wazorik. He was my mechanic. I mean, the guy's fantastic.
He
closes his eyes and fix something, you know? So between me, him, and my dad, like, that was like, you know, a good trio.
Yeah.
You know, and I was able to sell carts. I mean, I gotta be honest with you, I loved it. That got me excited. Like when you make a sale, you're just like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's it, you know? I mean, one of the best examples of that was I had a guy come in from Benton Harbor, from the Harbor Shores area.
Yeah.
Bought 5 golf carts from me. I thought this guy was full of crap.
Okay.
Walks in, he goes, I need to buy a golf cart for me and my neighbors, and we're up in Harbor Shores. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, hoity-toity, sure, yeah. Whatever you say. I'll be back tonight.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, Harbor Shores is a PGA golf course that they put in here about 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah. It's a big deal in our area.
It draws a lot of money into the area.
And people name drop that a lot more than they probably should.
Yeah, that's true.
So
I think so too. But I'm definitely name dropping it now.
Well, I guess I meant like the guy said, I'm from Harbor Shores.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like he was important.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we're all important, bro.
Yeah.
We all make the same amount of money. You know what I mean? In the end, it's money.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he comes in, he buys 5 golf carts for me. It's $25,000 sale. I made $32,000 that day.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Like you talk about 100% and going 100 miles an hour. Like that was it, man.
Yeah, that's
like, that
amazing.
Was the pinnacle of that, you know?
It's cool to see that you got that hustle from your dad.
Yeah. Oh, that's definitely one thing that I got from him. Stubbornness and just knowing how to make money.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? I may not be able to polish a turd into gold necessarily like he could, but I'm pretty damn good at it, you know? Like you said, you got to keep pushing, man. It comes right back to it. Like, that's like the mantra of my life is just forward.
Chad, that's amazing. So the way I end every one of these shows is I always ask, do you have any word of advice to give anybody that's going through some struggles? You know, obviously, you've been knocked down a few times. Everybody gets knocked down.
Yeah.
If you were to talk to one of your friends today that was going through some stuff, what would you tell them?
Everything you want is on the other side of what's scaring the hell out of you. No matter how scary it is, no matter how insane or crazy other people say it is, what you want is on the other side of that. So don't give up. Don't give up. Just keep pushing, man.
Dude, that's fucking incredible. I appreciate you coming and joining me tonight.
I appreciate it.
I love you, buddy.
Love you too, brother.
Is no matter what you did when, you know, when I knew you, I say when I knew you, like I don't fucking know you. fuck. I don't know where I was going with that. I mean, I know where I was going with it, but I don't know how I led into it. So,